show is a proud member of Friends in Tech at friendsintech.com.
Good morning, folks. This is your captain speaking.
Technorama.
Remember when?
Technorama.
On this day in tech history.
Tech.
And now, the news.
Tech.
What the chuck?
Technorama.
Welcome to Blockhead Video.
I was wondering if you can tell me about this podcast.
Over there, in the media corner.
Sharon!
Technorama.
Hold my beer and watch this.
Unfasten your seatbelts and disregard all safety rules. Here's your flight crew, Chuck and Craig.
Welcome to Technorama. This is the show that takes a lighthearted look at tech, science, sci-fi, and all things tech. Yes, really this time. Thought I was going to say something witty and then go, not really, didn't you?
Yes.
Like this always. Is the show for June 17th, 2009. If this is your first time listening to Technorama, thank you for joining us. If you're a return listener, welcome back. We appreciate you giving us your time. I am Chuck Tomasi, and with me is Craig Stepp. How are you, Craig?
I'm fine.
And just to make life interesting, we thought, hey, why not introduce some new tech variables? So I got a replacement mixer.
Because
since the old one was giving us enough problems, we thought we'd bring in a new mixer and just...
So it's the X in your formula.
And then I'll go and sell the other one for more than I paid for this one. So it comes out all good in the end.
Now that you've given your master plan out, maybe the guy's going to back out who's buying your old
That's
one.
That's what PayPal accounts are good for. And the other thing that PayPal accounts are good for is remote control. No, I have absolutely no segue into this, so we're just going to do our go-to-my PC placement here.
Yeah. Remote control.
Go to my PC is the easiest way to get remote control to your PC. You can try a 30-day free trial. All you need is a web browser and go to gotomypc.com/techpodcast. That's gotomypc.com/techpodcast for your free 30-day trial. Try it now. It's easy. It's fun. It's affordable. That's what you can do. Do that now. Hey, we've got a bit of a different show coming up tonight. We've got, rather than our regular lineup of Remember When and the news and Media Corner and all that stuff, we have a special guest with us tonight. We have Vernon Wilmer. How are you, Vernon?
Fine, yourself? How you doing?
Oh, good. I'm glad you're still out there because, you know, technical difficulties are fraught on this show and thought, wow, he's been awful quiet. We have
I'm pretty experienced with technical difficulties.
Soundproof in the green room. Well,
Chuck, you know, Vernon, you're still in Vegas, right?
Yeah. I'm out back on my patio having a cigarette and some coffee, actually.
Well, see, you know, the only reason we called you is we're going to PayPal you like $5, see if you can put it on the table. You know.
Awesome. Well, $5 goes pretty quickly on the table.
Well, let's start out with a little bit about who is Vernon and why did we ask him here?
I was a Borg drone at Star Trek The Experience for 5 years, and I believe you've asked me here because I'm kind of the guy who's the historian of the place, doing a documentary about it and whatnot.
So you get all your good material from April?
Well, I get a lot of material from her because she's been there since the beginning, since the place was constructed. So she's been kind of a consultant on the documentary series.
Or as I like to say at work, older than the furniture, because I am.
Yes.
But Chuck's older than the trees that made the furniture.
Hey.
Oh, God, I hope she doesn't hear this.
So how cool is it? Oh, she probably will. She knows where we live. Yeah. How cool is it that you were a Borg? That was my ultimate Halloween costume if I could ever find one.
Well, you know, the novelty of... I loved it. It's the best job I've ever had, but the novelty of wearing that makeup, mask, and costume wore off pretty quickly, especially in the summer months.
Now, you have...
We did see the Borga Lounger, so yes, we understand that.
Yeah. With the fans and everything.
That was the best they could do to keep us comfortable and try to preserve our costumes.
And that's not what April said. They were trying to preserve something else, but we'll talk about that later.
She said, yeah, most of the people were bachelors. Now, we were there last August, just prior to the closing, and we're just amazed at what we saw behind the scenes. Were you always a Borg, or were there other things you partook of?
I was mainly a Borg. I came in as a Borg with 16 Borg when they opened Borg Invasion, and I eventually graduated to the Borg Trainer and then started getting into small Starfleet roles, nothing major.
Explain the Borg Trainer. What is that?
Well, you know, it's funny because a lot of the other actors at the place kind of scoffed at the Borg Trainer, like, ooh, what are you going to train a Borg to do? They don't talk. They just walk in a straight line. But the most important thing about being a Borg Trainer was making sure the other Borg understood what not to do. Don't talk. Don't move your arms or your legs like this. You know, it was reining them in rather than teaching them how to do something.
Ah, okay.
Well, see, Chuck, you know, when you're first assimilated, you know, you don't really know what to do. So you have to have a trainer to kind of show you around. And
a mentor.
Yeah.
Kind of ease the transition. Yeah.
I was thinking more like, how the astronauts are trained, where you've got this crash test thing and you have to go underwater as a Borg. Not quite.
Welcome
that
to the Hive. I know it's your first day, but
let me tell you about your healthcare benefits.
There was that, and there was the drinking test to see how much warp core breach they could hold.
Yeah. For those of you who don't know, the warp core breach isn't that big fishbowl drink at Quark's?
Yes, it's the most powerful drink in the universe.
Comes with
besides the Pangalactic Gargle Blaster?
Yeah, very similar.
Nice cross-reference, Craig. Wow. So you tell us what a typical day of a Borg looked like.
Well, if you're working the ride, you clock in, you put on your stuff, you get up there, and you basically, depending on the busyness of the day, an average day, you would sit around during your hour and a half shift for about 30 to 40 minutes at a time. And then when your alarm goes off, you get up and you do 4 or 5 minutes worth of show. And then you sit down again for another 40 minutes. Then you get bumped out by the other Borg and go down on your break and try to cool off.
Now, did you also, I noticed that April and some of the other actors socialized. They walk into Quark's and they strolled around the promenade and you could do pictures with them. Did you do some of that as well?
Oh, yeah. The promenade was my home. As soon as I got off of work, you would see me at Quark's or shopping on the promenade. I was as much a fan of that place as an employee.
But were you wandering around in costume freaking people out?
Oh, well, that's different. Some of the alien characters have what's called floor work. And I was originally, when I was brought in, I was half ride Borg and half floor Borg.
Floor Borg?
They minimized, yeah.
As one in my car, floor Borg.
The mistake originally, they had the original 16 Borg from the ride also rotating through the floor. They wanted to dwindle that down so just 3 of 6 was on the floor because he was the most popular floor character. He didn't do the ride. He was just a dedicated floor character. So wow. I was always his backup after that. After they took us off the floor, they would use me if Michael wasn't available for weddings, floor work, PR work.
Weddings. Do you take this cereal pork to be... what was your designation, Vernon?
My designation was 7 of 16, primary adjunct of Omni-Matrix 05.
Holy catfish. I thought my employee ID was hard to remember.
You're right.
So, if 7 of 16 was the backup to 3 of 6? Is that what you
Correct.
Said? My brain is starting to hurt.
Yeah, we just dwindled it down to, you know, I would call him 3. They would all call me 7. We just got... It got dumbed down, but of course, calling me 7 always often got me, you know, confused with 7 of 9. Which there's a big difference there.
Well, that's a bit like saying your address is, you know, Appleton, Wisconsin, United States, Earth, Solar System, Milky Way, local group, Virgo cluster. It's like, okay, you can stop now. So, go ahead.
I wanted to ask, and I think you answered this in some of your video, which we will link up in the show, of course. Before the you got on over at the experience, what were you doing actually?
Well, I dabbled in acting quite a bit since I was a kid. I lived in California for 20 years, mm-hmm. but nothing acting, special effects, puppeteering, voice work, but nothing ended up making it worth it. There was no steady work, so I fell back. It turned out I had talents I discovered accidentally in the printing industry, and mm-hmm. I learned a lot of skills in that. Not the least of which is Photoshop work, which I do a lot of photography and video editing, which is how I'm able to make this documentary now. Mm-hmm. And when I moved here to Nevada, which was out of necessity, which is one in one of the episodes of my documentary, the first thing I did, of course, was look for a print shop job. And the timing was just so perfect. Right when I moved here, they were doing the open casting call for Borg Invasion. And my friends and my family insisted that I go or I would regret it. So I kind of went begrudgingly and got the job.
Because I went out to Vegas, I guess it was around 99, 2000. You know, it hadn't been opened for very long. And I was actually meeting my fiance. And I was like, okay, while we're here, I've got to go to the Star Trek experience. And ever since I read about it and was like, I was amazed. I think I saw it online a little bit, something about it, and saw it in print. And I was like, what is this? And it was kind of the same reaction you had. So, what is this? Is that right?
That's the problem that the experience always had, is no one knew quite what it was. It didn't have, it never had proper advertising or, mm-hmm. you know, media exposure. People knew that there was a Star Trek thing buried somewhere in the Hilton. They didn't know quite what it was. In fact, during the convention every year, in 2002, Gary and Adam finally started holding the convention at the Hilton, which was, you know, 4 years too late, but they finally started doing that. We mm-hmm. would have people wandering over there from the con going, oh, what's this? I didn't even know this was here.
Yeah, so when, and it's not even on the Strip, so that doesn't help at all either.
Yeah, well off the Strip on Paradise Boulevard, first of all, and then buried in the armpit of the Hilton, not very visible, like a little cave off to the side.
I like the armpit.
Yeah.
Now, tell us about the video. We've mentioned it a few times. Bring us up to date. What is the video? Where can they find it? And info like that.
Currently, where I have it posted, the best site I could find was blip.tv. It's under Star Trek My Experience, which is the name of the series. When I started working there in 2004, I immediately started collecting material on the job, you know, photos, video, whenever I could get away with it.
Oops, I apologize.
Ooh, feedback. That's the queen trying to contact me. sorry
Turn
about
away.
That. Yeah, my subspace transmitter is still active. So I was planning to make... I knew the job wouldn't last forever. In fact, when I started there, they told me we had a good 4 or 5 years left in it for sure. Hmm. So I thought I would collect enough material to make, say, a one-hour documentary about working there when the place closed. When the place did close last year, turns out I gathered so much material, it was not going to be a one-hour documentary. It was going to be a 12-part series of episodes that were at least an hour long.
Wait, 12?
Who are you, Ken Burns?
Yeah, I've been likened to Ken Burns.
I'm sorry, I can't do this in less than 12 parts.
Yeah.
and that's being as concise as I can possibly be, too. I'm walking a fine line between, you know, kind of George Lucas style. What can I, you know, sacrifice and leave out and keep it tight? But on the other hand,
is this only
like,
green screen? Is going to be kind of boring in the next three?
Yeah, it's really shallow.
And
have
annoying characters and bad dialogue.
That's pretty much it. Yeah, that describes the whole new trilogy. I love that.
Yeah.
But, no, I'm making it as concise as I can, but also trying not to leave any important detail out. So mm-hmm. that's the way I structured it. 12 episodes, an hour to 90 minutes each. And, you know, I know that's a lot to watch, but people are going to have forever to watch it.
Sure. Well, what's the reaction been?
Oh, it's been better than I expected. I thought when I released the first episode earlier this year that people would be incredibly bored by the length of it and to watch something about something they've already seen, but I got so much positive feedback and people couldn't wait for the second episode, which mm-hmm. topped the first one because the second one is about the creation of the place, go back to the beginning. And now people are just salivating for the third episode, and it's been taking me a while, but I just got a new editing system and I'm getting used to it, and now it'll go a lot faster.
All right. Questions from the chat room. We've got Mark, the Encaffeinated One, says, how heavy is a Borg suit, and how much of it was functional?
The Borg suits, depending on how long you have worn it that day, because they absorb sweat, they start out about 40 or 50 pounds in the morning. By the end of the day, they're so soaked with sweat, they could be, you know, 60 or 70 pounds. It was just insanity.
If I remember right, some of the head appliance was like foam latex rubber stuff that slipped on almost like a hood.
Yeah, it was a whole Halloween-style pullover mask with cutouts for one eye and the mouth region, which is the only place you'd have to apply your makeup. It was very clever to do it that way. Because when Three of Six first started as the floor character Borg, they had him in the TNG old-school style Borg, where you'd have to make up your whole face and put on that ridiculous helmet. That was a huge pain in the butt for him.
All right, there are rumblings of a new experience opening since the movie was a success. Are there rumblings of a new experience opening?
Yeah, you know, like usual with things like this, the stories can kind of go back and forth. The official story right now is that the new location of the experience will be at the Neonopolis on Fremont Street, which is a few miles north of, you know, the old location.
Mm-hmm.
I've spent a lot of time at the place, so have a lot of the other ex-employees, and the deal seems to be about money and licensing and the management of the Neonopolis, and it keeps getting red taped and bogged down. If this is going to happen, which they claim it's an official deal, it's going through.
Hmm.
It looks like we're probably not going to see anything starting up for another year or two, though. So it'll be a while.
How much of the props were salvaged, or did CBS Paramount reclaim a lot of that stuff? I mean, because there were a lot of unique props in the museum, and how do you get the motion rides out of there? They were built in as part of the building.
It's a very sad story because there were so many cooks in the kitchen. You've got CBS Paramount who, you know, doesn't quite... they don't quite lord over the props the way Paramount used to in the days when they were the overlords of Star Trek. Mm-hmm. It's just CBS now going, Star Trek stuff? We own that? Okay. So they sent people in to tag things that would go back to CBS Paramount. But, of course, the Star Trek warehouses were gone. Penny Judae and the Okudas had to clear all that out and put it in the auction the year earlier. Because probably because of the death of the franchise and the no longer a need for the original props anymore because we have CG these days, they decided to clean out all the Star Trek warehouses. So there was really no place to put that stuff. I assume that the museum items went back to whatever company it is that does the... it's a wrap auctions for Star Trek. Now, Cedar Fair, our third-party owner, they also came in and took stuff, and mostly, you know, generic theme park-related items. That was dispersed to Knott's Berry Farm and a bunch of their other parks. And they took our conference table, which upsets me because we had this conference room that was not unlike the observation room on TNG. And we had that hardwood and glass table.
Oh.
And they, Dick Kinzel, the CEO of Cedar Fair, assuming it was just a conference table, before we even closed, had it shipped to Knott's Berry Farm and put into one of the offices there. That upset us all quite a bit. But the ride stuff was mostly just struck and haphazardly stored away somewhere near Neonopolis, I believe, and back at Paramount. And a lot of the things, very sadly, did not survive the deconstruction. The Enterprise D, which was our glorious giant model ship in the round.
Oh, no,
there,
don't say it. Don't say it.
It broke into pieces when they took it down. In fact, it wasn't even Cedar Fair didn't even take it down. They couldn't figure out how to take it down, so it was left for the Hilton to take down, who just cut it down and let it fall. And the deflector dish ended up on eBay a couple of weeks ago.
Wow.
Anybody get any video?
No, but there were pictures
video?
Of, unfortunately, I don't have a video, but I wasn't there, but I did get pictures of the Voyager being taken down and stored away, and one of the port wart nacelle was cracked on the edge of the truck when they were loading it.
Oh, the humanity.
Yeah, it was horrible. The only thing that went down well was the Enterprise, the Constitution class. Oh, that one was fine. It's very tiny. They just lowered it down to the guest ticketing level and took it apart. That was the easiest one. And the Enterprise, the Constitution class Enterprise, went down just fine. And that was the first thing that was actually taken down and stored away.
Oh, my heart's breaking.
There's stuff all over the place in good or bad condition. being stored by several different companies, and a lot of the stuff, the small stuff, like our uniforms and our props, our phasers and rifles, a lot of that stuff went home with different members of management and put up on eBay. You can still find some of that stuff on eBay right now.
So let me ask you, what, if you can divulge this information, what did you come away with?
I knew he was going to ask that.
I took my Starfleet uniform home. I didn't want to be without that.
Sure.
And a couple of pens from the supply cabinet.
Yeah. And I'm taking this chair, and I'm taking this...
this paddle
this
game.
Flower vase.
I would have taken a lot more if I'd known how easy it was. I would have taken a lot more.
Hey, you should have gone through the props and just put a tag on it that says, to the Vernon Wilmer collection, you know.
Yeah. Make up a fake business address and have it shipped there. That would have been great.
Yeah.
Is that Nomad in your pocket, or are you just glad to see me?
Is that a phaser rifle? What do we got there? I guess the pride of my collection is I grabbed a square foot of bridge carpeting.
Oh, cool.
They were cutting that up, and I just grabbed myself a square.
So you have bridge carpeting?
Yep.
Where did you place that?
Oh, I have a nice little shadow box frame that's got a lot of trinkets from the experience. My cast and crew patch, my ID badge, my employee badge, cool. The section of bridge carpeting, a matchbook from Quarks, all kinds of little trinkets.
It had to look sad when they're ripping up the bridge and all that good stuff.
Yeah, we got to see, we didn't really get to witness firsthand the deconstruction. We had to... see that in pictures through the people that did remain there during the deconstruction. The only thing they were taking apart while we were still employed there was the retail area. They were striking that as we were closing.
Oh, wow.
But a friend of mine, one of the actors there, we just a few days ago took a trip down to the Hilton and to do some gambling, and we went downstairs to see if the security guards would let us in to take a look, and it is a gutted cement and metal beam building now. There's nothing.
No sign of it.
You wouldn't even recognize it as the experience. Very sad.
Yeah. Well, I have another question. You know, we were talking about the reaction to your video that you made, and I know I'm kind of jumping around on subjects here, but have you been contacted by Paramount or anything like that? Or
Apparently, my documentary is documentary enough and nonprofit, and just devoid of enough copyright infringement to where they're just not going to cause a stink about it. In fact, I was told, this story has been bounced around quite a bit, I was told, third hand, that somebody had talked to a licensing agent from Paramount who is aware of my documentary and a lot of my other work, actually. And their standpoint, unofficially, is that as long as this documentary puts a positive spin on them and the environment that they created for the fans, that they won't, the most they could do is force me to take it down or force the host to take it down off the internet.
Sure.
But it's been quite a few months, and that hasn't happened yet. Besides, if that does happen, I'm a slick person. I can find some other way to get it out there. To
You know, what I was thinking, not so much as them asking you to take it down, because, look at, like New Voyages and some of the other Star Trek fan stuff. They don't they don't force any of that stuff down as long as they're not making money off of it. But my question was, I didn't know if they contacted you to include anything on a DVD or something like that. I don't know.
They did contact me through our... apparently, they don't want to have anything to do directly with me because they had my old boss.
I know the feeling.
They had my old boss, Chad Boutte, contact me so I could, because I'm, in addition to the archivist kind of the place, I'm also the person who knows every single employee's address, phone number, and email. And the problem they were having was the Paramount film crew had been there on our final days to film a little documentary segment about us for an upcoming Star Trek DVD, which I believe is the new movie.
A little documentary? Well, I've got a big one.
Oh, really? Yeah, exactly. It's going to be interesting to see how theirs compares to the final episode of my documentary. But while they were there, they assumed they didn't need to get release forms from any of us because our original contract under Paramount Parks was that our likeness could be used in anything that they shoot there. But the problem they found out later, a few months after we closed, in fact, was that they forgot about the third-party thing with Cedar Fair. That kind of created a loophole there. So they needed to get release forms signed by all the actors and other employees who appeared in what they were shooting that day. So then I had to do all this legwork, contact everyone, have everyone else contact everyone else, get them to sign these damn forms and email them in. And we got in just under the wire. I got the very last person who hadn't signed to sign and send it in the day before they needed it.
Wow.
Did you charge for those services?
You know, I was thinking about at least demanding a credit on the DVD for that.
Yeah.
But I thought it was just a, you know, I'll just chalk it up to karma. Maybe they'll just leave me alone with my documentary if I just handle this for them. But rest assured, the reason that documentary is going to be on that Star Trek DVD is because I got all the signatures in.
Well, good. Well, at least we know. You know, that's the important thing.
Another question from the chat room. Has anyone ever run screaming from the Borg at the experience? After all, they are one of the more frightening Trek beings.
You wouldn't even believe it. A lot of kids would chicken exit the ride because they just couldn't handle seeing the live Borg. And sometimes some adults.
I think you wet yourself, Craig.
Yeah, that's what I did.
That would be a code 13, I believe.
Clean up on deck 3.
There were even people, adults, in the Quark's bar area who were afraid of the floorboard, wouldn't go anywhere near them.
That's just too cool.
You know, I've always thought the Borg were pretty menacing, but not that bad.
Yeah, plus, well, you know, up in that environment, in that ride, it's loud, it's dark, it's like a haunted house sort of setup. And up until the point where you see the live Borg, you've only seen Borg on a film screen.
Right.
And when the live ones start coming out at you and it's all loud and dark in there, it's a little imposing. But, of course, we got both ends of the extreme. We got people who just stand there with their arms folded like, what the hell is this supposed to be? Yeah. Well, I would love it if we get a very frightened reaction. That was usually children and believe it or not, Asian people. I don't know why Asian people are always afraid in that ride.
That's fun.
Godzilla!
Not to be Godzilla.
You're green. Hey,
now, I want to ask you something else, because I obviously didn't have the opportunity to be there year-round, although I probably would if I could. On Halloween, did y'all do anything fun, like, you know, everybody wear goatees?
On Halloween, we got to be ourselves. Never forget, it was 1988, 87 or 88. I'm at a convention. Yes, I used to go to Star Trek conventions. And I'm getting Michael Dorn's autograph. And it just happened to be Halloween the next day. And just a small talk with him while he was signing his photo, I said, since you're a Klingon, like, all the time, well, what are you going to be for Halloween tomorrow? He looks up at me, and in that baritone voice, he just goes, I get to be myself. So that's pretty much, that was our feeling. On Halloween, we were just glad to, you know, just not wear anything having to do with Star Trek. I, of course, would slap on the old Indiana Jones costume every Halloween. We would have parties, employee parties.
That's cool. So, hey, what's the release schedule for the new the videos, or do you have really a schedule just whenever it's done?
I've been operating on a whenever it's done basis, but what I'm trying to do is get this series done while I'm still raking in unemployment, which is another 20-some-odd weeks. So you can definitely, you'll see the whole series before the end of the year. And I just got a new video editing system, which I'm trying to get used to. So what I'm doing right now is, since it's a superior system, I'm going back and I'm redressing the first two episodes to make them higher quality.
Oh, and special edition.
Then I will,
Director's cut.
Can we get those on Blu-ray, too? Again.
Yeah, I'm putting in a digital Jabba the Hutt also.
Got some footage of Han Solo on the bridge. We're not really sure how it got there, but
Greedo's going to shoot first at everybody. Then I'll get back to the third episode, and hopefully after that, I will have such ease with this new system, I'll be able to release a new episode every 2 or 3 weeks.
Beautiful.
And yes, I think I do owe you some footage.
Oh, I'm glad you brought that up. That was painful.
Yeah, I need that footage. That's going to be for the ninth episode of the series.
Okay. I'll be sure to get that to you.
Yeah, some of what you covered. I've seen the first. I wasn't unaware that the second was out. But some of the stuff you showed in the first, like, hey, yeah, we were there. Yep. Now, did you get the, did you highlight the package from Babylon 5 or heading to Babylon 5?
I'm afraid you lost me there.
Oh, there's a container on one of the decks that had a destination of Babylon 5.
April told me about that once. I, believe it or not, never paid much attention to any of the stickers or labels on the set. I read a few of the joke phrases in the transit corridor.
Oh, those are great.
And I did notice the 47s everywhere and the GNDNs everywhere, but I, not being a fan of Babylon 5, I just never bothered to photograph or look at those.
Mm-hmm. Craig, what's on panel 101?
Oh, it was Daisy.
Give me your answer, too.
Yeah. Yeah, we were when we got off the transporter area and we go down the corridor, it's like April stopped us and she pointed out a couple of them. We just had a blast, you know, reading those. And we got a lot of those on. I took some pictures of some of them and on some video. So see, there's a lot. That's what I was worried about. When I started watching your first episode, I thought I thought it was fantastic. And two, I was like, he's going to cover almost everything that we talked about, which to a degree you do, but there's some nuggets that you, of course, caught that we didn't and vice versa. So between
we simply didn't have access to the back stairwell to hear the whistling reverb. You know, that was awesome.
Beautiful. That was beautiful.
Think about the 11 years experience was open, both the place and the people. There are so many nuggets and stories and everything. No one source could ever be all-inclusive. And this series is simply my take on the place, my memories of it, and my observations.
I'm going to have to start doing that at my work in case they ever close.
Yeah.
How far in advance did you know that the experience was closing, Vernon?
Well, like I said before, during training in 2004, our trainer, Paul Mattingly, who was the great Voha of Klingon, he had the wherewithal, somehow had the foreknowledge to tell us during training, guys, don't count on being here longer than about 4 or 5 years. That's about all this place has got left. And I remember that him telling me that all through the years I was there. And every year when it came up towards our lease date, we would all be scared. Place is going to close. Place is going to close. And once we made it past that December hurdle, we were fine for another year. It felt like it was constantly going to close the whole time. So when the news, especially after Cedar Fair took over, good Lord, we knew that this was going to be our final year. Cedar Fair owns us. They only own us because they bought Paramount Parks. They don't even like Star Trek. They don't know what they've got. Mm-hmm. And when we knew that the most recent 5-year deal with the Hilton was coming up for renegotiation, and the place, because the economy had sunken down, we knew that they were going to close. So when they called us in for that meeting, which was almost exactly this week last year, they called us in for that meeting and told us, well, I guess it'll come as no surprise to you. We're going to be closing on September 1st, blah, 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 blah. And that's when, even though it wasn't a surprise, the reality finally sunk in, something we've been worried about for all those years. And our hearts just sunk. So then we... that was horrible. We spent the last 8 weeks on board knowing when exactly we were going to close, and that was emotionally, you know, traumatizing.
Hey, these Borg aren't acting right. They're like depressed.
Depressed Borg. What's the point?
Yeah.
Resistance is, this job is futile.
Well, you know, Paramount Parks owned the theme park right down the road from me, where I used to work when back in high school. And it was kind of cool when Paramount bought it. They started bringing in, we had the Days of Thunder ride and all that kind of stuff. And we had a lot of Star Trek characters and like Klingons.
Star Trek Actors Program, yep.
Yep,
that's
and
where
we had.
Started.
Yeah, and then we even had the Borg Assimilator, the big roller coaster, which is still there. Now it's renamed, which is still pretty cool, by the way. But now Cedar Fair.
They sent a couple of us Borg in 2004. They sent a couple of live Borg down there to Carowinds to promote the opening of it.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So
one
you
of
were
them
here.
Was, no, they didn't actually send me. They sent Chad Boutet, who eventually ended up being our floor manager. Mm-hmm. He was just a Borg at the time. And another Borg I like to call Smiley, big tall Borg named Eric. I called him Smiley the Borg because he's one of those people that has a permanent grin no matter what face he's trying to make.
Mm-hmm.
And they got sent down there. Those poor guys, they didn't really have a PR person attached to them to make sure that they ate and had breaks. And these two Borg were basically left to wander around Carowinds after the roller coaster was opened.
Yeah.
And trying to find a way to get in the shade and eat and drink. And then they were grabbed and put on the roller coaster. And we almost had a tragedy because on Chad, they didn't make sure that the bar was closed all the way down on
right.
So he was yelling, you know, stop, don't start the ride. If they had gone, he would have flew out of the thing, and that would have been one hell of a story.
Yeah, it's one of those roller coasters you actually lay down in, or it kind of, the thing kind of lays down.
Oh, like the Superman kind of ride?
It's sort of like that. Yeah. And you're laying down and you're going head first. So, and it flips around. Now, granted, where it starts doing the flipping, there's these nets under it. I don't know if, I guess it'll hold a person, but still. It held wallets. I know I've seen plenty of wallets in there.
I'm just glad I wasn't one of the Borg sent. I can't imagine being in that costume and having to deal with the trauma of being on that roller coaster.
Now, Vern, did you still go to any expos or cons or anything?
Well, you know, I've always been a sci-fi fan. I spent my entire childhood going to Star Trek conventions, mostly Creation Cons and Fangoria. And when I started working at Star Trek, especially since during those 5 years, I was never free to go to the convention because I was scheduled to work at Star Trek. I kind of lost interest in going to cons because now I was living that life, not just being a fan of it.
I am a con.
It's kind of broken me of the desire to go to conventions. Mm-hmm. It would kind of be like asking one of the cast members of one of the shows if they want to, you know, pay to go in and observe. And I don't have that desire anymore.
So we won't be seeing you at Dragon Con.
Not unless they invite me or some of my fellow actors as speakers or something, which I did send an email to Gary and Adam about. They have not responded.
Now, I could ask you something that just popped in my head was, you know, after hours when y'all kind of had, I guess, kind of the run of the place, did y'all do anything that sticks out in your mind was especially fun, like any cosplay on the bridge? Y'all do anything weird like that? Or,
well, believe it or not, a lot of the areas were restricted. I mean, when the show was over, we were not allowed up there. We were just roaming around. But there was a more lax time back in, say, 2005, 2006, when I spent, as a frustrated movie maker, I spent a lot of time gathering up some of my fellow actors during our downtime or after the shows. And we would make little Star Trek movies up on the bridge and whatnot. That was probably the funnest thing about working there, was having access to the sets and being able to make little Star Trek movies.
Sweet.
Hello, Kirk, my old friend.
I'm finding myself fatigued again. I'm sorry.
Oh, rest in peace, Ricardo Montalban.
I'm sure his coffin had fine Corinthian leather.
That would be awesome.
Yeah.
Vernon, we got to wrap it up. Tell everybody once again where they can find your awesome video footage.
That is BlipTV, BLIP.TV, and it is called Star Trek My Experience. You can just type that into their search engine. And the best thing about that site is you can actually watch and or download the original Windows movie file instead of watching a flash-rendered version of it.
Ooh, so I could maybe put it on my iPod Touch and carry it around with me.
That's what I did, Chuck. Yep, that's what I did.
That's the good stuff. Hey, it has been a real treat. We've enjoyed having you here. Maybe we can have you back again from time to time and discuss further episodes or what's coming down the pipe. Maybe get an update on the Fremont Street Experience. Do you still keep in touch with a lot of the other actors?
Everybody. Well, mostly everybody.
Everybody you liked.
He's got all their emails.
Exactly. Precisely.
I know like you. I know email you. You stay away. We know assimilate you. You can't offer anything to the Borg.
Unworthy of assimilation. Exactly.
We have standards, you know.
Hey, that would be my downfall. It's like, oh, I'm getting about to be assimilated. Rejected. Eat him. He's no threat to us.
Yeah, it would be a 4F.
It's a 4F stamp. Like a Bugs Bunny cartoon. Reject. Vernon, yeah. It's been a lot of fun, and appreciate all the update info. And thanks a lot.
Thank you.
All right. And thank you to all the listeners out there. We appreciate your support. If you like the show or want to leave us any feedback, we'd love to hear from you. Give us a call on the listener line at 206-222-2428. That's 206-222-CHAT. Or you can email us, technorama@chuckchat.com. Visit the website, www.chuckchat.com. Or reviews on iTunes, all that other good stuff is greatly appreciated, even if it's non-monetary. Tip jar.
Yeah.
Thanks to the following people for donating their time and talent for keeping Technorama going. Mad Mar for providing all the great blog content during the week. Music Maestro. Yeah. This show is a proud member of Friends in Tech. You can find out more at friendsintech.com. We're also affiliated with all the great podcasts over at farpointmedia.net. A world of audio wonder awaits you there, as Michael says at the end of every show that is automatically dropped in. If you're getting this show the old-fashioned way by clicking on the link on the website, consider subscribing for free to get it automatically delivered to you. Drop either one of us an email, again, technorama@chuckchat.com, and we'll tell you how. You don't need to visit the website. You can have it, all the goodness, for free. Until next time, thanks for listening. Tell a friend about Technorama. And, Craig, any words of wisdom?
No.
How about resistance is futile or something?
Left the wisdom in the car.
Give me a binary high five.
As the binars would say, 101. Well, not like that, but...